limited brighter spells. Temperatures, well, we're looking at highs of 15 degrees. In Scotland, well, it's going to be a wet start to the day and our outbreaks of rain are going to be fairly slow moving. So the band of rain will still be there into the afternoon, particularly across northern areas, gradually turning a little bit brighter across southern and central Scotland later in the day and towards the evening time, but with the risk of a few hefty showers. Top temperatures here around 11 to 16 degrees. And that's the latest weather. It's back to Alan.
Thanks, Chris. Now on Radio 4, it's time for our Book of the Week. Jennifer Saunders first started to make us laugh with her comedy partner Dawn French in the 1980s and has continued to do so ever since. Today, the creator of Absolutely Fabulous takes an ill-fated trip to India with her co-writer Ruby Wax. Jennifer Saunders reads the next instalment from her memoir, Bonkers, My Life in Laughs.
I am now sitting on a boat at sunset, floating down the River Ganges, looking back towards the Ghats of Varanasi. There are two musicians playing, one on a small light drum and one on a kind of oboe called a shenai that is ear-piercing and playing music that would appear to have no melody or beginning and, regrettably, no end. Lying near the musicians is Goldie Hawn. She's politely tapping her hand along to the non-existent beat. Next to her is her assistant, Terry, a tall, handsome American woman wearing a good pair of khaki chinos. Next to me is Ruby Wax, and this is all her fault. It is October 1997, and a few months before, I had received an overexcited call from Ruby.
Hello, Jennifer, 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 we have to do it.
Do what, Ruby?
What, didn't I tell you?
No, Ruby, you have to start at the beginning. You have to start at the beginning of a conversation. You haven't told me. It turns out that Ruby had met Goldie in LA and Goldie had told her about a film script she'd been trying to get written. The first script that had been done wasn't right and now she was looking for new writers.
We can do this, Jennifer. Jennifer, Jennifer, this will not take us more than a month. Will you talk to Goldie?
Well, I don't know. No,
Jennifer, she's calling you tonight.
Goldie called. She explained the plot of the movie she wanted written. It was about a woman whose husband dies and who wants his ashes scattered in India. This takes the woman on a voyage of self-discovery at a time when everything is changing in her life and she has lost a sense of purpose. Goldie at this time had just turned 50. It was to be a comedy. On the surface, this seemed like a piece of cake. The only thing that Ruby and I hadn't introduced into the equation was that we had never written a film script before. And this was to be a factor when, a year later, we were still at it. Even today, Ruby and I will meet and discuss the writing of the film. One day it will happen. It will be done. We met Goldie on one of her trips to London. We sat in her hotel suite and she regaled us with stories of India. One story was about a disabled Indian journalist she knew and admired. He had once dived into an empty swimming pool and broken his neck and was now in a wheelchair. She told us the story of how she had once been at his house when his mother was there too. They were talking and a Barbra Streisand record was playing. He then looked at her and said, "Goldie, Goldie, will you dance with me?" And she said, "No, no, I can't dance with you. I'm not strong enough." But the mother said, "Yes, you are, Goldie. You are strong enough." And they lifted him to his feet and she held him up as they danced to Barbra. Goldie was visibly moved as she told us the story. When she left the room to have a pee, Ruby turned to me with a look of disbelief. "Jennifer, I think she wants this story in the movie." She was right. And we did try. We started writing. We worked out some good characters and a whole world for Goldie's character to exist in San Francisco. I had become obsessed with the idea of writing a film about the menopause, so that became my focus. Ruby wrote about the modern art world and the character's youth in the 1960s. We wrote pages and pages about characters upon characters, and it was the length of two feature films before the words ashes and India were even mentioned. Because the truth was, we didn't know anything about India. Neither of us had ever been to India. We were quite happy in our little modern art and menopause world and couldn't really see the point. I mean, to this day, I can't believe we didn't just write what Goldie wanted. She wanted a lovely film about a woman who goes to India, looks gorgeous and finds herself. We could have done that, and it would have taken a month. I mean, what were we thinking? Goldie's frustration eventually turned into plane tickets. She, Ruby and I flew first class to India along with her assistant, Terry. The trip was for 10 days. Our first stop was Mumbai, where we would be staying with a friend of Goldie's who was called Parmesh. Parmesh met us at the airport. As we queued to go through customs, we could hear a voice shouting and just see a hand waving above the crowd. Goldie Hawn! Goldie Hawn! This way, Goldie Hawn! We eventually found Parmesh, and Goldie explained that Ruby and I were travelling with her. And from that moment on, we were Goldie Hawn! And her team. Mumbai Airport was chaotic and hot, despite the fact that we'd arrived late at night. I could see Ruby was suffering from culture shock. As we headed to the car, she gripped my arm. Jennifer, don't look, half man, half skateboard coming up fast behind us. Parmesh was extremely rich. We were taken from the airport in an air-conditioned Mercedes to her beach house. For the next few days, we were given the Parmesh air-conditioned tour of Mumbai. It seemed a source of annoyance to Parmesh that Goldie could not be separated from her team. We were taken to Bollywood sets and air-conditioned hotels where she had arranged for Goldie to be sold some jewellery. We drove past slums and mind-rasping poverty, past, and I'm sure sometimes over, thin dogs and thin people scraping a life from the streets. Parmesh smothered us with hospitality, but by the time we got over our jet lag and it was time to leave, Ruby and I were glad to go. We needed to lose the air conditioning and smell India. Our next stop certainly opened the nostrils. We flew to Varanasi, the spiritual centre of Hinduism. If we wanted culture shock, this was it. Varanasi is a riot of colour and smells. It buzzes like a beehive. The streets are jammed with rickshaws and taxis, and the alleyways leading down to the river are crowded and alive. Because it is traditional to burn dead bodies on pyres by the river and then scatter the ashes on the water, there's always a slight whiff in the air of barbecued corpse. In Varanasi, we began to understand India a little, and Ruby became smitten. One day, she and I were in a taxi being driven back to the hotel when the driver stopped at a crossroads. He turned and spoke to us. OK. If we turn left, we go to Rajasthan and Pakistan. If we go right, we go to Nepal. Where are we going? We chose straight on, back to the hotel, please. But at that moment, I could understand how so many hippies and travellers get stuck in a place like this and never come home. We could have gone anywhere. And the truth is, it somehow felt very safe. Now we are on the boat and Goldie's assistant, Terry, is not looking well. Terry came to India with all her own food. She had a large suitcase full of ready-made meals. She was, she said, on a diet, but I suspect she was actually just a little unwilling to eat native. She was tall and robust, but also a little nervous. One day, when we were having our palms read, as you do, by a man down by the Ghats, I picked up a bottle of water that I assumed was mine and took a few big swigs. When I looked at it, I realised that it wasn't mine. It was water, but murky water, and the inside of the bottle was green with algae. I had drunk Ganges water. Water that contained every kind of human and animal excretion. Dead bodies, spat out toothpaste and soap. Plus anything else that just might have slopped in upstream. I showed Ruby. Jennifer, you are going to die. I stayed calm, but was dreading the night ahead and what might come out of either end. It seemed inevitable that something would occur. Then, as we were walking back to the street to find a rickshaw, an extraordinary thing did occur. Ruby and I were walking some way behind Terry and Goldie. We saw them stride past a thin slip of a dog that was coiled up at the side of the road like a snake. As they passed, it stirred, uncoiled, and in one quick movement leapt up and sank its teeth into Terry's bottom. Having committed this act, it just sauntered off down the street, leaving Terry in shock. She had been bitten by a dog. In India! We rushed back to the house of the fortune teller, who had somehow missed this event on Terry's palm. Terry took down her trousers and let us examine the wound. Yes, it was a bite, but no, it hadn't broken the skin. Trousers up, we went in search of a rickshaw to take us to our hotel, where we could get more advice. My drinking of the Ganges water had taken back seat to this full-blown emergency. We could only find one rickshaw, and the driver told us all to pile in. He was a very thin man, peddling an ancient rickshaw with four extremely well-fed women in the back. Uphill. The journey got slower and slower until eventually Ruby got out and decided to push. And now another extraordinary thing occurred. A passing cow, with exceptional hornage, butted her up the bum. I mean, what are the chances? Back at the hotel, Terry, who had grown paler and paler on the journey, went to her room and took medical advice. This was a woman who previously would never even have taken a headache pill. I, meanwhile, went to my room and drank a whole bottle of whiskey. My mother had always said it was good for killing things, so I took her advice. And I have to say, apart from a cracking hangover, I never suffered any repercussions. I was quite drunk when we were summoned to Terry's room later. She was standing there with a Sikh doctor who had been recommended by the hotel. Terry came towards us and whispered, "Does this guy look like a doctor to you?" When we had all agreed that he did in fact look like a doctor, she was happy and proceeded with the consultation. The doctor was going to order the anti-rabies drugs, and for the rest of the trip, poor Terry had to inject. That evening she wasn't well. I think she was in shock. India had risen up and bitten her in the ass, as Ruby pointed out. Goldie then told us that she had given Terry some of her own antibiotics in case it helped. Antibiotics for what? We asked. Cystitis. Really? The world had, for one day, gone totally bonkers. Our job on this trip was to take in the atmosphere and come up with ideas for the film. We tried. We really tried. On the surface, it all seemed so simple. We had a story, and now we had the basis of plenty of funny material, and Goldie was pretty straightforward. I still can't believe we made our lives so complicated. We were already 2 months past the month that Ruby said it would take. We went to Rishikesh, and from there we drove for one night further up into the Himalayas, where we stayed in a small hotel. In the evening, Ruby and I joined Goldie in a moment of reflection and meditation, in a beautiful room overlooking the gardens while soft rain fell. Now, I like a bit of reflection and meditation, and I'm not impartial to a bit of yoga occasionally. But Goldie wanted us to om with her. To om. Ruby ommed. But I just couldn't find the om in me. Ruby looked at me. "Jennifer, om." I look back on it and wonder why I couldn't om. I feel the whole project would have worked if I could have raised just one decent om. Poor Goldie Hawn. Om.
Jennifer Saunders continues reading from her memoir Bonkers, My Life in Laughs at the Same Time Tomorrow. The abridger was Richard Hamilton and the producer was Elizabeth Allard. And for more on Britain's favourite comedians, go to the Book of the Week pages of the Radio 4 website. This is BBC Radio 4. It's 12 minutes to 1. Now here's the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 today, Friday the 25th of October. There are warnings of gales in Fitzroy, Lundy, Fastnet, Irish Sea, Shannon, Rockall and Southeast Iceland. The general synopsis at 1800. Complex low, Western Sole, 990, expected Orkney, 988 by 1800 Friday. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours. Viking, North Utsira, South Utsira, 40s. Westerly, 4 or 5, backing southerly or southeasterly, 5 to 7, perhaps gale 8 later. Rain later, good becoming moderate or poor. Cromarty, 4th, Tyne, Dogger. Southeast, 5 to 7, veering south or southwest, 5 or 6 later. Occasional rain, moderate or good, occasionally poor. Fisher, west 4 or 5 backing